stage the Dark Doctor himself, Michael Jason.
I'm not an intellectual, and also after hearing all the applause for that, it's like Harry Secombe used to say, follow that with the sea lions. I'm on a hiding to nothing here, babies.
So how are you, sir?
I'm all right, thank you. I'll just give you one little quote if you haven't heard it from. I thought it was Groucho Marx, but he pinched this from Voltaire, the great French philosopher. Behind every successful man is a surprised mother-in-law.
Okay, well, it was foolish of me to hope, but here we go. So we're going to start with a couple.
You're not an intellectual.
No.
There were one or two Scotsmen, have been. There were David Hume, the great philosopher. He was an intellectual.
Ah, well.
You're just pretending.
I'm pretending.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. I only have two BAFTA nominations. It's fine. You
mustn't try me too.
Okay, we'll just start with a couple of quick fire questions.
I'll take my hand away. Now I'll get the rest of you.
Okay, so cats or dogs?
Cats or dogs?
Yeah. Favorite, preference, one or the other. You have to choose.
Dogs.
Dogs, okay. Beer or wine?
Both.
Stage or screen?
Stage.
Daleks or Cybermen?
Daleks. No, Cybermen. Daleks can't climb stairs, can they?
Okay, favourite baker, Tom or Colin?
That's very unfair because I know them both. And I think they both, Colin had, as you probably know, had terrible problems. Tom Baker used to write a lot of his own scripts, so the director was in the background. This is why sometimes you talk to directors. Tom wasn't all that popular with them because he'd get hold of the script and say, this is, are there any children here?
No.
Tom used to say, I'm gonna rewrite this. This is whippet shit. One of his favorite expressions.
So what you're saying is Colin had problems and Tom created some problems.
Now, Colin, as you know, Doctor Who would have finished. He could easily have finished when Colin was doing his work. It wasn't just Grade, it was other people behind that who didn't like Doctor Who at all, though they didn't fancy it. Whereas Tom, it sort of ruled the roost, whereas Colin was always having arguments with various people, and John Nathan Turner was as well, trying to keep the balance of things, of not going too far. And of course the scripts in Colin's time, some of them weren't very good, I don't think.
Well, actually that's interesting. Whilst you were there, because obviously you were part of the big rebrand after it had been cancelled, were you aware of the politics surrounding it, the show at the time?
I was aware of all the tensions that were going on. I mean, the atmosphere you could cut with a knife sometimes because it was that rows. I couldn't get involved, and neither could Linda Bellingham, because we were just in the trial of a Time Lord, and it wasn't our business to argue because we didn't know enough about what was going on. Apart from sometimes getting a script and you thought, well, how can we do this?
But, you know, kind of prior to being cast as the Valeyard, were you aware, sort of coming into it, that there was some problems going on and with all what was going on in the press?
No, not at the very beginning, I wasn't, because we had Holmes's scripts were very good, and then he became ill, so we then got the Baker twins doing the scripts. And it wasn't until about episode 3 that I did when I realised there was something going on backstage that you know, they wanted to drop it, or there were rows going on all the time.
When you first got the role, were you aware of the outcome of the character? Did you know what it was going, or did they keep that from you?
I knew he was the black side of the Colin Baker Doctor. Mm. I knew he was the evil side.
Yeah.
But they should never have written that in, because they've made a they made a bit of a rod for their own backs there, because what was John Hurt playing in the one last year? And they've mentioned the Valiard, so they...
You're just waiting for the phone call.
I'm not begging for work, but if only Moffat and people like that would accept the fact that I was the dark side, fine. Mm. I work with Moffat. I think I've mentioned this before. I worked with Moffat on Press Gang, which was years and years ago when he was first starting as a writer. And I realised he'd got talent then. Mm. I thought, this guy's going places, and he has. Well, he does the Sherlock Holmes,
of course, yeah,
as well.
Do you feel that? Do you notice them sort of sidelining certain established rules that they've said in the classic series, like the Valiard, or?
No, I think nowadays it's got a bit too clever, and for Capaldi to say in one of the episodes, "I'm Scottish," I thought that was a terrible mistake, because Doctor Who doesn't belong to any nationality. He's on his own, that's the magic of him. He can't suddenly say he's Scottish, because then you'd say, well, where from? Edinburgh, Glasgow, Aberdeen. So it would put him into a sort of little part of Scotland. Mm. Doctor Who is eternal.
Yeah, I suppose, although I'm quite glad he's just decided to keep his native accent this way.
No, I'm not having a go at Scots. if he'd said I was Irish, that would also have been wrong, I think, or Welsh, or whatever it is, because Doctor Who is not any particular nationality, I don't think. It's like when Eccleston was asked why he was doing it in a northern accent. He said, well, it's from the north of the hemisphere or something. He said, I don't want to sound pop like Tom Baker. I sent an email to Tom Baker saying, you Liverpool riff-raff. Eccleston has just said, you sound posh. Which Tom just did a straightforward English. It wasn't posh. Mm.
It's just the way he resonates, I think.
Yes, I know.
So as I say, you seem to have a lot of knowledge of the new series. So are you an avid fan?
Yes, I suppose I am.
Yeah, you keep up with it?
Yes, I do. Because I want to see, I'd like some of it to get better. I thought. Now, I didn't mean better on that level, I meant more understandable, because they seem to get away with anything they like now. I thought Jenna Coleman was good with Capaldi, up to a point. Because sometimes she seemed a bit twee, and it might have been the writer that she didn't know what to do. You know, if in doubt, laugh, or if in doubt, shout. I mean, she's very, very good in, if you like, a Queen Victoria, it's the sort of Mills and Boons edition of it. I mean, but she's far too pretty, and she's a very good actress. I was with her, and I didn't have many scenes, because when I did Emmerdale about 7 years ago, she was. It was only about 2021 then, and I knew she was a good actress. I knew she'd got something, a bit like I knew Moffat had the talent for writing. But I find Doctor Who now, there was one episode that Capaldi did set in Sherwood Forest. Do you remember that one?
We're trying to forget it.
Well, I said to myself, if this had been better, it would have got back to the humour in Doctor Who. There doesn't seem to be all that much humour in the present Doctor Who things. Capaldi's doing his best, but he's not being given fantastic humorous lines. But I quite liked the Robin Hood one.
Yeah.
Because I thought the guy who played Robin Hood was marvellous. You didn't like him.
I just didn't like the story very much, in my opinion, but you know. Again, I wonder if you're one of these people that like Love and Monsters, controversial.
And then there are so many Scots comedians, and I expect Scots people have a sense of humour.
Oh yes. Well, the thing is, he must be having a hard time trying to be funny, because he's trying to shake off the Malcolm Tucker thing all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the right to improvise, but then he improvises, just goes, beep.
Although, I thought Tennant's Doctor Who, that was a different thing altogether, because it was... it was fantastic acting, and sometimes it came on, especially in the last two episodes, where it was sort of tragic acting, and it was superb. And he could, there again, he's another Scotsman, of course, but doesn't do a Scots accent.
No, no, annoyingly. But
he does when he's doing commentaries.
Yeah, well, that's his own voice.
Yeah.
He's not going to come in and go Cockney geezer on us on the commentary. So let's reel it back to 1986.
Yes.
Okay, what are your memories of being approached for the Ballyard? Was it an audition, or were you literally called and offered the role?
No, it was just out of the blue. I came back one day and my wife said, there's a script come, and I read it and I thought, oh yeah, because Doctor Who, sort of legendary. It's a bit like Coronation Street and things like that. It was legendary, and I said yes straight away. Didn't have to see anybody about it. Got to know John Nathan Turner because he lived in Brighton at the same time as I did. And I just thought, yes, fine. How many weeks? 12 weeks or something.
Yeah. So what do you have any sort of fond memories of the filming of it?
Not many. We were stuck in the studio. We were studio bound. And poor Linda Bellion was stuck there all the time. Eventually, I get out when I meet the Geoffrey Hughes character in the Potteries, and I had to go all over the place in the Potteries. I don't know whether you've heard this story about Bonnie. I'll tell it again. We were in the Potteries and we were coming back after late night filming. There was Geoff Hughes, who was one of the sweetest men I've ever met, and he didn't mean this in that way. Colin Baker, myself, and Tony Selby. And it was about 1 o'clock, and we weren't working next day, and Geoff Hughes said, and Bonnie was sitting next to me, he said, I know what we'll do, we'll get back to the hotel. We'll knock at that hotel porter, have a few drinks, and then we'll all shag you, Bonnie. Stopped outside the hotel. She made a break for it. Bonnie, don't, he's absolutely joking. She said, I don't care. Terrible thing to say. And goes to bed. And of course, we then knock up the night porter.
That means something else in Scotland.
As it does in America. Yes. We woke up the night porter. But the trouble was, dear Geoff Hughes, God rest him, he made it slightly worse because he bought Bonnie some flowers the next day and a bottle of champagne. So she thought he actually really was serious. But then it turned out to be all right. And about 2 or 3 days after that, he was virtually in tears about it because it was just a silly expression at 1 o'clock in the morning, which you can make.
How was Bonnie in sort of coming into that role, sort of starting out halfway through your season?
Yes, because Nicola Bryant was in it, wasn't she, to begin with. Bonnie was fine, but I mentioned it to her. I only saw her a couple of weeks ago in Brighton. And she said about going into Doctor Who to begin with. And I said, well, first 2 or 3 scenes, you were sort of coming in and presenting yourself like a dancer, which you was. Mm. She said, I still have to watch that. But I said, it didn't matter because it seemed to go with her youthful vitality, so if she was going like that, it didn't matter. And she stopped doing it, but it was like a dancer presenting and singing. And I liked her. She's a gorgeous lady. I think you probably met her, haven't you? Most of you.
I have not quite yet, but we'll get to that.
But the trouble was, Bonnie had one of those grasping mothers, and when Bonnie was 17 or 18, her mother was always telling the producer what to do about her daughter in the wrong kind of way. Mm. There were some parents like that. And Bonnie hardly had any relationships until much later on. And then she's happily married and got a I saw her daughter the other day as well. But if you've got parents like that, it kind of holds you back a bit, because they're doing their best for you, but in the wrong way, I think.
Going back to like what you were saying about the scripts with Robert Holmes, what do you remember, or did you ever get to read the original episode 14 that Eric Saber wrote?
What was that about?
I don't know, I haven't seen it. Robert Holmes was writing the final two episodes. He didn't manage to write the last one, and Eric Saber wrote his version of it, and then him and John Nathan Turner fell out, and that's when Pip and Jane Baker had to write it with no
notes. Didn't Saber would write one of them at all? I'm sure he did.
He wrote it and then he pulled it because they couldn't agree. Do you remember seeing that script?
I can't really remember. I think I might have done, but then we got rewrites all the time when the Bakers lost. I like the Bakers, but they weren't sort of Charles Dickens or anything like that.
Oh well, okay.
No, don't get me wrong. But the trouble is, if you're doing dialogue that isn't terribly good, you've got to be even better as an actor. And you think, I can't go right over the top because that's making it. But you've got to concentrate more and try and make more of certain words that actually is not very well written. And I think actors, I've been in quite a few things where I think actors ought to get awards for doing dialogue that's absolute whippet shit.
Have you watched it all back? Have you seen it recently?
No,
you've never watched it.
My daughter watched some of it years and years ago. Now I haven't seen it for a long time.
Excellent. So this is all from memory. This is not from reminding yourself of it as you saw it, obviously.
A lot of things at that time meant quite a lot to me, because I got on very well with Colin, and he's still a friend of mine. Although we've had arguments about, we were in Chicago and Colin had a go at me about my, I still smoke, but at my age, I mean, good God. And we were with Terry Molloy and Nicola Bryant in Chicago having a meal, and he went on about my smoking. And I said, Colin, he said, I know what you're going to say, I'm overweight. I said, yes, you have a go at me about smoking, I'll have a go about you being overweight. Now let's forget it. But he wouldn't forget it. It went on and on. I just said to Terry, I hadn't seen him since, Terry Molloy on it, because we were having this violent argument, which actually didn't really mean all that much. And I've seen Colin loads of times since. And he said, I'm still smoking. And I said, you're still overweight. If he was slim, I'd be in trouble.
Oh dear. Right, moving on. I want to ask you about Only Fools and Horses.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You were in possibly one of the most famous episodes. What are your memories of that?
It's very strange because I did 8 days on that. How long ago was it? About 20 years?
Something like that, yeah.
I did 8 days on that. And it keeps being repeated on UK Gold. If it's repeated on Thank You Very Much Indeed. And I was on tour with up in Glasgow, about 4 or 5 years ago, with Art Malik and Chris Timothy, doing a play called, I forget what it was called now. And I was in this pub, and there was this drunk Scot, as most of them are. But he wasn't violent. He said, I've seen you before somewhere. I've seen you before. And I trotted out a hell of a lot of stuff I'd done. He said, nah. And I thought, here we go. And he wasn't violent. He wasn't being particularly nasty. But I could see he was getting annoyed, the fact that I couldn't tell him anything that he'd seen me in. And I said, oh, did you see the last episode of Only, the episode of Only Fools and Horses? I was one with a watch. He said, why the, didn't you tell me that before? And then bought us drinks. He was telling him, hey, there's an Only Fool at a time on our hands. So considering 8 days on that. And to me, it was, there again, it was one of the classic, of three they did at that Christmas, it was one of the classic ones. They tried to do it later on, years later, but it didn't quite work. And those were the last three, I think, and I was so proud to be in it. It's like Laurence Olivier wanted to be in Coronation Street for years and years, and they couldn't fix it so that he would be in it, because it's a institution.
Did you find it hard to keep a straight face when you're doing sitcom? You find it sort of when these sort of surreal.
Not on that, but the guy who played the grandpa.
Buster Merrifield.
Buster. You know that they had a whole sequence where we're sitting down having a meal, and Buster, as a grandpa, puts coffee instead of gravy, and gravy instead of coffee. And they got this, he had to go out and be seen getting this, and they said coffee. But he knew in his mind that it was the other way around, so he kept taking the wrong one. They put coffee so that he would put, but it would be the gravy, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And I like Buster a lot. He was he'd been a bank manager before he became an actor. It's very unusual. No, I had a lovely time, and Anne Lynn was on it as well. She played my wife. But considering it was only 8 days, I mean, it's nice being in institutions. It's like Doctor Who.
A couple of weeks work, a couple of months work, and then it's following you around for 50 years.
And I never thought 30 years ago that I'd be here in Swansea 30 years later, Doctor Who. I didn't particularly think it would last that long because of various things that were going wrong at the time. But it has, thank goodness, and that was mainly because of the fans, I think.
Absolutely.
And I find, I may not know, Chicago, Los Angeles, Edinburgh, Glasgow, wherever it is, you're all like a family. And I've said this before, if all the population of the world were Doctor Who fans, there wouldn't be any violence.
This seems like a great opportunity to open this up to the floor. And unlike Fraser Hines, please don't talk to the floor. It's now pissed at me because I got it wet. So who has a question for Michael? Let's see if I can get this.
Oh, here we are. Michael, you walked with David Jason before Only Fools in A Bit of a Do. What were your memories of that?
Well, I'd worked with David Bit of a Do and did four episodes of Darling Buds of May as well. No, Bit of a Do was marvellous, although I found out that he was doing, in the first episode, he was a bit too Del Boy-ish, and he was supposed to be a northerner. And he didn't do a bad accent. Considering he was brought up in the South. And they had a word with him. I think somebody had a word with him because he was getting too much Del Boy-ish. No, it was very enjoyable. A good cast. And David Nobbs, when he died last year, I went to his memorial thing with Barry Cryer. And he was such a brilliant writer. Not only did he do that, but he did Reginald Perrin. And he wrote a very good book called Going Gently about his mother dying of Alzheimer's. A brilliant writer.
Another question?
There's a chap.
Hello, Michael. Do you have any memories about playing Colonel Mustard on Cluedo?
Yes.
Do you want another question?
No. I don't know whether any of you ever saw it. It had David McCullum. Remember David? He's still alive, living in America. He did Man from Uncle. Richard Wilson. Coo Stark. Rula Lenska and Molly Sugden. And Richard Wilson considering he plays that awful old Dreer. I mean, I know he's brilliant, isn't it? He's one of the funniest men I've ever met. And I've got, well, I mean, Kustak, I know she's been ill, but she wasn't a terribly good actress. And there was one time where I had a scene where they'd done a close up on her, and she had to go and get changed for something else. And they said, "Do you want her there?" And I said, "No, a wig block would do." And the lighting cameraman said, "Well, at least you'll get some expression out of that."
Another question, quick.
No, but it's very funny. Richard Wilson, I thought it was just me, but the crew started, because he had this, he said it was just minimalist acting, and he'd look at you in a certain way, like actors can do on stage, and I couldn't look at him eventually, I had to look sideways, and the crew got this as well. And suddenly you'd find him doing a scene where you looked at his feet, and it was only shot there, and he'd got one foot up like, I can't quite do it, he'd got one foot up like that, which is quite silly if you look at somebody's feet with one foot up in the air. But a lovely, lovely man.
Hello, could you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Did you have a scene with Tom Baker in Rasputin, the film?
Oh, yes. No, oh. No, it wasn't called Rasputin.
Oh.
It was Nicholas and Alexander.
Nicholas and Alexandria.
No, well, you see, there again, some people say it's Nicholas and Alexander, which would be a totally different film altogether. Probably shoot it in Brighton, where I live. Sorry?
You had the scene with Tom Baker in the film?
Yes, I had a few scenes with him.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah, but I'd met Tom before.
Yes.
Because when he got that film, he was living in The Cut, which is a place near the Old Vic. And he'd been he'd just joined the Old Vic, I think, for a time, under Laurence Olivier. But he was living in a one-up, one-down, and O'Toole was up for that film, but his contract had finished, and there was a great actor called Max von Sydow, who's a Swedish actor.
Yes.
Sam Spiegel, who is the only Jewish guy I've ever disliked in my life, who was the producer, wouldn't accept Rasputin. Max von Sydow as Rasputin. Rasputin was a peasant. He could quite easily have had an accent.
Yeah.
And so Tom did it for absolute peanuts.
And he became Dr. Who.
Yeah, but not until about 4 years later.
Another question.
But I got to know Tom on that film, because I don't think he'd done a film before. I'd done a couple. We got on like brothers on that.
Hiya. I remember years ago, Tales of the Unexpected. You were in an episode. Didn't you play a chess player?
That's right.
Yeah. Sorry, I've forgotten as we say about it now. At that time, Roald Dahl, did he have something to do with the episode or something to do with the series?
No, not at all. He just took the money from the... I never met him. I knew his daughter, Tessa, who was married to a friend of mine at the time, but no, he was never around.
Any more? Another question? There we go, Alex.
I think he played Peter Gillam in the Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy TV series in 1979. What was Alec Guinness like to work with, and what did you think of Benedict Cumberbatch's interpretation of the part in the film?
Guinness, I'd worked with before on Cromwell, but he never, I don't think he approved of Richard Harris, who was in Cromwell, and I tended to sometimes have a few drinks with Richard Harris, but Guinness never said anything about it. And I was in South Africa doing a film, and I got this script and I thought, wow, managed to get hold of my agent, which took quite a long time. And he said that Guinness had put four of us up for the me, Joss Ackland, Nigel Stock and another actor for the parts. Now, ages afterwards, I asked Alan, he would never accept the fact. Now, he put four of us up because he liked our acting, which I felt so grateful, but he would never, ever admit it. And he was a lovely man to work with. A lovely man. Cumberbatch, the film, it had some very, very good actors in it, but the film was only 2 hours and a bit. Our television was 6 hours, so we had more leeway. And I thought the film, if I'd only watched that film, I wouldn't have understood it. And I've done the audio book as well, twice. I did the shortened version, and 10 years later I did the lengthened version. I do all Le Carré's books on audio. And I've got to, well, I communicate with him quite a lot.
Thank you.
But Guinness was, you don't get acting like that nowadays. It's all over the top, or there's very few you can get away with being, like Richard Wilson would say, minimal. You can be intense, but you don't have to shout. And if you're good enough, and Guinness was, I thought he was brilliant. But he's not a method actor, but he put weight on. Now, unless somebody you shoot them that way on, sideways, you don't know they've got a belly. Most of his shots were like that, so you couldn't tell he'd put weight on, but he thought, because he'd met the guy who it was based on. I've forgotten his name now, but I remember him coming back from this meeting, he said he's supposed to be head of MI6, and he had a very loud tie on. And drank quite a lot.
So, Alec Guinness had a problem with an actor who liked Guinness.
Another question?
Oh, yes, over there. Making me work for my mic.
Do you have any memories of working with Jeremy Brett on The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Disappearance of Lady Frances Carfax?
Oh, yes, but I rather sad memories in a way, because I'd known Jeremy for quite some time at that, because I'd worked with him on the Olivier, when Olivier played Shylock and I played Graciano and he played Bassanio. And Jeremy was okay, but he'd had some illness when he was young, which affected him all his life. And he was bisexual as well, but I mean, he was married twice and had one child, I think. But at that time, he packed up, he was on coke for quite a long time, because I remember seeing him in the Midland Hotel in Manchester, and I hadn't seen him for a long time, in the main restaurant. He said, "Michael," and he gave me a kiss, full on, and I was, because I thought people are going to get the wrong idea. He said, no. But by the time we came to do the Sherlock Holmes, he packed up the coke and packed up booze, but he was smoking. I mean, I still smoke, but he was smoking around about 100 cigarettes a day.
Wow.
And drinking about 20 or 30 cups of coffee or tea, and 30, you know, so, and it was dreadful. He still managed to do it work-wise, and I thought he was brilliant. I like Cumberbatch's Sherlock Holmes, totally different, but Jeremy, to me, was the one who really made it, first of all. Cumberbatch is brilliant as well, but a different way of playing that. But Jeremy tried to play it as if he was, you know, I mean, Sherlock Holmes is supposed to be a drug taker, but he got a bit too far on that. And he was splendid to work with, and I remember playing mini golf with him a few times, and he was fine, but it was all these, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of cigarettes, which didn't do him any good. That's why he died fairly young, I think. But a lovely human being in lots of ways.
Any more questions? Oh, yes, I see a hand. I see a hand.
I'm
you mean it? You're not just waving at someone else in the room.
Yeah,
You said about working with Tom Baker while he was playing Rasputin. What was Tom like before he played Doctor Who? Did his personality change at all? Afterwards?
He was still he was eccentric, definitely, when I first met him. Because we went on a publicity tour of America after we'd done Nicholas and Alexandra, me, Janet Sussman, and Tom. And they said that everything we signed for was all paid for by Columbia Pictures. So we got chatting with these American students one day, and we took them all back to the hotel, and we ordered Volney and things. And Tom was then rung up by the chap who owned the hotel in America and said, "This is about £4,000 or £5,000. Who's paying for this?" And Tom said, "Oh, the Columbia Pictures. Oh, you're very welcome, sir." And so we'd order, I don't know, a cup of coffee and a hamburger. And because we tipped very well, signed for Columbia Pictures, we used sometimes to get one person with a hamburger, another person with the serviette, and another person with some tea. So three people would arrive, we'd tip them all. And then I told Tom about 3 or 4 months later that they'd made a terrible mistake and he'd got to pay back all these things, which he didn't accept. I'm sorry, I'm going way off the subject. Tom was just as eccentric then as he is now. I mean, I don't know whether you've heard this before, but do you remember it was when Blair was still in charge, and he and Ken Livingston apologised to the Africans, everybody's apologising all the time, for the slave trade, right? Apologise for some unknown reason. Tom sends me an email saying, "Now that Blair and Livingston have apologised for the slave trade, are the Africans going to apologise to us for eating all the missionaries?"
Wow!
So, on that level, I mean, Tom, and of course, Tom, when he was doing Doctor Who, he said he was on a building site when he got offered Doctor Who. Because he said to Laurence Olivier, Olivier had said, "That's marvellous, you're making your body fit." And Tom said to me afterwards, "I needed the work," because he'd lost nothing going on. And when he was on the bill, and there was a girl he fancied, he said for the first 2 or 3 days he was going into this pub at night. When it suddenly got Doctor Who, he said, "Guess what happened that night?"
Do we have any more questions? Yes.
Hello, Michael. Had these superb confrontational scenes with Colin Baker in The Trial of the Time Lord. What was it like to work with the late, great Linda Bellingham being the referee for you two in that story?
Oh, Linda was a lovely actress. She was a bit cheesed off with being stuck in the studio, and Colin, of course, had to say a lot of very bad, but I got on very well with Colin as well, acting-wise. We kind of gelled, because as I said, sometimes the scripts weren't as good, and we had to really be on top of it, so that if you played some of those scripts too real and too natural, it would have just gone out the window. But Linda was the good die young, don't they?
Oh, well, you're still going strong, so there we go.
Mugabe's still around.
No, but you can't expect miracles, sir. Another question? I'm sure I saw another hand. Oh, well. So, may I say, you've recently turned 80, is that correct? I was doing some...
When my son's still... Do it as a. How old are you now, Dad? I said, "You do my. I'm. In 2 months, I'm going to be 81. Well, shit."
I don't think it matters. I mean, when I was.
What is it now? How old are you? About 32 or something?
Bang on.
I thought I'd better exaggerate. It's very, very strange about age, because I'm still 12 and a half sometimes, stupidly. I'm 17. I still play a bit of cricket, but I think it was Terry Pratchett the writer who said, I mean, he's dead now. He said, inside every young, inside every old person is a young person wondering what happened.
Yeah. Very true. Now, all I was going, I was about to pay you a compliment because I was quite surprised when I did some research on that, and that's what it said.
What do you look like when you're surprised? That looks like a drunk Scot.
Well, it's a stereotype, isn't it? It's genetic. I was just, you know, you've had such a varied career. Do you have, do you have any favourites, obviously, apart from Doctor Who, that stand out in your mind as being the sort of the highlights of your career?
I get annoyed sometimes. I don't get annoyed, but people go on about Nicholas Alexandra. In fact, that film didn't do anybody any good whatsoever. Nobody. Janet then did a couple of films, one with Michael Caine, which was terrible. I went back on stage, and it wasn't a great film at all. It was too long. I was proud of it. I played, this is going back a long way. I did Siegfried Sassoon in about 1969. Wilfred Owen, the Sassoon actually was shown at the British Film Institute only 3 months ago. I did Beethoven on BBC Two, Dickens on television, and I thought, hey, and then Nicholas Alexander then didn't do me any good, because a lot of people thought he's in films, so I didn't get offered television until once or twice, and then I got into playing smaller parts on television, like in Bit of a Do, although I enjoyed that. There'd been so many things. I enjoyed doing all John le Carré's audible books and things like that, and radio. Although, I mean, over the last 3 years, I played the devil with Derek Jacobi playing Cardinal Newman. I then played Stalin on radio. I then did the dark charisma of Adolf Hitler as a book, so I had to imitate him. And then, thank God, I got the wit of Winston Churchill after that. So it was going from the devil, Stalin, who was also a devil, and Hitler, and then Winston Churchill. I've done a lot of Winston Churchill stuff on tape.
All right, okay. I'd love to hear some of that at some point. No pressure.
It's on, you can get it on, I think you can get it on, if you look it up. Yeah, the other thing with Bob Sherman, when Roosevelt and Churchill letters, which is available. I didn't know it wasn't. I did the history of. I wouldn't advise that. The Churchill's history of the Second World War, but it's 700 pages, and some of it's not very interesting until you get to the purple bits.
Do you prefer audio drama to telly? Do you require? Very prominent voice, you quite enjoy doing the radio work.
Oh yes, but I don't prefer it to television. It just depends what you play. I think in the end, it's the script that you rely on. The script's the most important thing. If the script's good, unless you get a bad director, it's going to be good. And there are a lot of good actors around now, a hell of a lot of good actors. I'm not an old-fashioned, oh, it wasn't like that in my day. There's Michael Sheen, who is Welsh. There's Cumberbatch, there's Toby Jones, there's that comedian's father, Rory Kinnear. There's so many of them, good actors.
Yeah. Well, do you find
Owen Teal, another Welshman. Have you seen him?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I saw him in Milkwood in Brighton, and I met him the other day because he's in that thing with Ian McKellen. Mm. He was brilliant in Milkwood. Because I'd seen it on television and I thought it was an absolute load of crap.
Yeah.
Tom Jones, who I like a lot and I used to know, playing Captain Cat. But Owen Teal on stage, I said to my daughter, that's the way Milkwood should be done. It's not about modernising it, it's about a village in Wales, and it's also about human beings. And anyway, I'm getting off on my high horse again.
What I was going to ask was, when you take a character that was born on television, like the Valeyard, and then you take it into Big Finish for audio, do you find a huge difference there? Apart from the obvious ones between between screen and audio.
No, not but the peculiar thing is the way I play the Valeyard. I think because I tend to project a bit more than I would if I was playing a normal person. When I was first offered it, about 4 or 5 years ago, I had to go back and watch some of the, I did watch some of the television to see what my voice sounded like. And I found out it all came back just like that. Did the first one, I think, was Bonnie, and they're excellent scripts.
Mm.
They're better than some of the television, I think, the big Finnish scripts.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do we have any final questions before we wrap this up? Oh, I see always a few more. Excellent.
Are you, or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
No, that's a different conference, different conference.
Hello, Michael. I don't agree. I have the impression that the Trial Tunnel would have been better if it had been four separate stories instead of trying to pretend it was all one man story. Is that something you can relate to? I mean, do you think there's, is that a fair comment that it would work better if it hadn't been cocked up pretending it was one epic story instead of four separate ones?
I don't quite get the gist of what you mean.
Do you think Trial Tunnel would have been better? If that season had been better as four separate stories as opposed to being wrapped around the trial?
I think so, yes.
I think it might have put you out of a job.
You got a trial and then you thought, oh, we're going to thing with Brian Blessed or whatever it was, then the trial, and it was too jumped about, I thought. I agree with you, yeah, it could have been, but it could have been better anyway.
Another question, please.
Don't let me know. I'm not knocking it, yeah. But I just think there's certain areas of it that could have been better script-wise. Holmes was all right, and one other person, but it could have been better.
Another question. I saw a couple more hands over the side. Over the back. Keep them occupied while I make a journey to the back of the room.
You ought to be slimmer, actually. It's the drink. The Welsh joke. I was going to say the Welsh joke. Richard Burton.
If they asked you to return again to Doctor Who, would you do it? And would you also do it if it was a recurring character?
Oh, of course I would, because it's a lovely part. It's a marvellous part, because you know, you're just a villain. You can do anything you like up to a point. Of course I would. I keep saying it, all these dudes. I'm not begging for work, but it would be nice to go back into it. But I tend to think the character is a bit kind of old-fashioned now, in some ways. I don't know how it would fit in, but then you can still get the Daleks occasionally, don't you?
And one final question. I'll come to you in a second, video.
Is there anything that you'd still, any roles you'd still like to play in your career? Anything you think, what I'd like to do is X, Y, Z?
Not really. I wouldn't have mind having a stab at Lear, but too many people have played that recently, and I don't know whether my memory would be good enough for it. But I just take what comes. I mean, I sometimes get some very good radio work, and. Well, Le Carré's reading his own version of that, but I don't know whether he'll write anything else, but his books are fantastic to do. And I do P.D. James, of course. I've done all the P.D. Jameses.
And we have another question over here.
As a counterpoint to that one, if you could have played any part on TV or film, which one would you have picked for yourself?
Oh, God, there's so many.
I see you as a Bond.
Timothy Dalton, he was Welsh.
I did Bond on radio with Bert Kwok, and he's gone now. Bert Kwok, Clive Merrison, and a hell of a cast. And at that time, I was up for Bond when Roger Moore, with Patrick Moore. Patrick Mower.
Oh,
no, because I knew Patrick Moore, the astronomer, as well, years ago. And Patrick was 78 the other day. There were three of us up for it. but then it was all dropped. I met Covey Broccoli and various people, and it looked as if it might be there, but my agent said, do you want to be? I said, yes. Thinking of the De Niro. But I don't know whether that wasn't the kind of part that would have appealed to me all that much, because there was no brain work involved in Bond, is there? I mean, there is now, the way that what's-his-name's playing it. I think he's very, very good. Maybe a bit too old. But the original Bond was an officer and a gentleman in the Navy, and Sean Connery got away with it, actually. But Sean Connery, to a lot of people, is the best Bond. But there's no brain work in Bond, is there? I mean, he's not an intellectual. It's all about bashing people and having a few relationships with women. I mean,
I can think of.
Could you have a female Bond or a gay Bond? Would that work? You can think of what.
So that's opening up the taboo question of whether there be a female doctor.
I know, and I don't see why. In some ways, if the actress is good enough, there shouldn't be. But then it would upset a lot of people. But there's a Scottish doctor. Capaldi said he was Scottish. Right, yeah, but David Tennant didn't say he was Scottish.
Sylvester.
He didn't say he was Scottish, though.
No, but it was hard. It was hard to not notice it.
All right, I bow down. Yes, that's it. I've forgotten about Sylv. Of course. Yes.
That's because he's lying on the floor over there.
Yeah, he didn't do received pronunciation, did he? I like Sylvester, he's a nice guy.
One final question before we wrap this up? No? Okay. Well, will you please put your hands together to thank Michael Jason?